Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. My name is Bob, and today I have a very special show because I am doing an interview with three women who are representing a bunch of different groups. But the main group that all three women sang in together was called The Voices, and later they all sang in several other groups. So it should be a very interesting story, so you should keep tuned, and we'll be playing some of their records, and they all cut some great records, and they did a lot of backing work for other singers and even for other groups. So, first of all, thanks so much for coming to the studio to tell your story. So, could you introduce yourselves?
I'm Cynthia.
What's your last name?
Cynthia Red.
Okay.
Red. Margaret Bond.
Okay.
Theo Myrick.
Okay. So, I guess I'm going to go in the order that we just... You just introduce yourselves and first of all ask each of you what part of Chicago you're originally from and what your background is and how you got started singing. So, Cynthia, what part of Chicago are you from originally?
Well, I'm originally from the South Side. I grew up in Audgill Gardens.
Okay.
And I've always sung in church.
And
so my basic music training has been through church.
And do you actually have a musical family, is that right?
Yes.
So your brothers were actually in a vocal group?
Right, called the Debonairs, 50s group.
And which were one of the most important Chicago doo-wop groups, right?
Well, to me.
And did they get started, are they older than you?
Yes.
So you were singing in church, though. So were you inspired by them, or were you just more inspired by gospel music to sing?
Well, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist, so the music that we sang wasn't really gospel. It was more anthems.
Okay.
Not really gospel.
Could you explain that? Like, what's anthems versus gospel?
Well, let me see. How can I call that? I guess anthems are more academic because they have definite rules that you follow when you're singing anthems in church. They're separated in different ways than gospel music. Gospel music is a music of feeling more so than message. And anthems tell a message, and it's kind of, what could I call it? I always thought it was more organized because we had definitely, I was a soprano, we had altos, we had tenors, we had bass, and then my uncle, who's the only rucker, taught us the sub parts. So you have first and second soprano, first and second alto, contralto, first and second tenor, baritone. So in our small groups, we would have represented just about every part to sing, and we sang always close harmony.
So it sounds like the harmony was even more organized than in gospel.
Oh, yeah.
Harmony. So you were singing in your church, and how early did you get started singing?
10.
Okay.
10 years old.
And so when you were in high school, did you continue to be involved with singing in church?
Yes, and I sang with the Robert Wooten Chorale. He was the music instructor at a high school that I went to.
Okay. And that was also singing anthems also.
Right.
Did you sing in any secular like vocal groups, like people at high school groups?
Not really. We had a girls group that sang, and we had a couple of trios, but we had a girls chorale, a boys chorale, and then we had the choir.
Okay, but you didn't have, like, a girl group in school? Okay.
No, I didn't.
So it wasn't until after high school that you actually sang in, R&B girl group?
Right.
Okay. Okay, so let's get to Margaret's background.
Hi. I came...
So what, Sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, that's okay. I came from a gospel singing group background. The Norphy Brothers, by way of Alabama to Chicago, was a very famous gospel group in the city. I'm sure you heard of
them. Yeah.
I knew that. And that's how, you know, it was in the family. And when I went to
Were they your cousins?
Those were my uncles.
Okay.
Those are my uncles. Daddy didn't sing. He was the tailor. He made the clothes, but everybody else sang. Mm-hmm. We sang all through high school. I was in the high school choir. We had a little girls' doo-wop group in high school that we only performed at the talent shows and some of the spring festivals that we had. But it really didn't get serious as far as singing doo-wop until after my brothers, Little Ben and the Cheers, my brothers and my cousins, they got started, and then I was a backup singer for them, and invariably through Richard, this is how I met these ladies.
So, what part of Chicago were you living in?
I was living on the south side. I grew up in Ida B. Wells. I've always been on the south side of Chicago.
Okay, so you were actually from Ida Wells.
Uh huh.
Okay, so what years were you living there? Because there were a bunch of groups there were a few groups I interviewed from Ida Wells.
I was too little then. I couldn't. No, I was too young then when I lived there. You didn't interview me.
Okay. So you wouldn't have remembered the other groups from Ida Wells.
No, I would not have. Because by the time they got started, we had moved already. We had moved further south.
Okay.
Okay, we had moved out of Ida B, and we had gone further south, and then we just started doing our own things.
So you were, when did you start singing gospel? Pretty much since you were a little.
Well,
really,
you know,
little.
Gospel was all we did. I mean, you went to church, you sang that, you know, and then when we started hearing the good music that was coming on the radio that wasn't gospel, and we could harmonize, you know, it was always harmony going on in the house, because that's all we knew.
Yeah.
It was music. All you can do, you know, you sang, you harmonized with anything and everything and everybody. So that's how it really got started. You know, that's what you did.
So your first exposure to secular music, though, was your older brothers, Ben and the Cheers, though.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was through Richard Pegee forming your group together,
right,
that you ended up singing backup on it. And that was after you were out of high school,
yeah,
too. So you didn't sing in a doo-wop group or anything in high school?
No.
Okay.
Well, a little bit. I said we did the groups. We didn't have a name. You know, it was just four girls that got together. We sang for Spring Festival, and we sang for the talent shows. You know, that was just what we did. It really was. I don't even know what we called ourselves.
What high school did you go to?
Englewood. Yay.
Okay.
Englewood. Parker.
Yeah.
Okay, and finally, the last member of the Voices. We have all three members. I have Dale here. So, Dale, what part of Chicago are you from?
Chicago. I grew up 62nd in Indiana, all the way through high school.
Okay.
So, I'm from that section. I went to St. Anselm Grammar School, where we had, we sang. They had operettas and everything at St. Anselm, and they made us sing. And then, of course, Sunday Mass or Mass, we sang there too. So it was, and in high school, I sang with a group called the Modern Misses. One of them is Edith Andrews, the Love Masters I was telling you about.
Yeah, you're singing.
She and I have been singing off and on from grammar school, kindergarten, I guess, you know. So that's pretty much it. And nothing too much happened too big except for with these girls. And then, right now, I sing at, I'm in the choir at St. Albie's on 91st and Stony.
Okay.
Loving it.
So you all pretty much had a gospel, or as Cynthia was saying, anthem style, but you had a church singing.
More anthem and classical music.
You had a church singing background, and then, except for Dale, you had a R&B group.
Right,
in high school.
All through grammar school, actually, we were in somebody's group singing in the schoolyard.
Okay.
There was music flowing from St. Anselm's.
Okay.
Because somebody was singing all the time.
So you actually were singing in girl groups, like,
yeah,
R&B groups.
Right,
in grammar school and high school, but you never recorded anything.
No, not until the voices.
So how did you all end up meeting each other and forming the voices?
Okay, I guess that would be me. Through Richard Pegee. I met Richard. He worked at Dell Farms on 63rd and was the South Park then. It's King Drive now.
So what was Dell Farms?
A grocery store.
Okay.
And then I would, Met Records was where I would go to buy my records. So I met him there also. Somewhere along the line, we started talking about singing. I knew Cindy. He knew Margaret.
How did you know Cindy?
I moved in the apartment over her.
I lived on the first floor, she lived on the second floor.
Yeah.
We just used to hang out and do all kinds of crazy
things. Where were you living at that time?
84th and Cottage. Yeah, the Cottage. We were the Chatham Grove apartment.
And how did he know you, Margaret?
I first met Richard when we started college together.
Okay.
In 19...
I think he talked about that in the interview with him, actually.
He came by and said hi, and I said hi, and he was a pretty nice guy. I didn't know that he was had all of this music in it, you know. And, I left school in 63 when my father passed away, and I should have gone back, and I didn't. But And then I met him again at around the end of 64, beginning of 65. And he told me about these two, and that's how we got together. But it was all because of him that we got together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I cut off Dale's story. So you were saying that you knew him through Dale, through
working at Dale Farm Grocery Store, then at Met.
Okay.
Right? And I to be truthful, I'm not sure how we got on the subject of us singing.
Okay.
But it happened, you know, and next thing you know, we're in Richard's mother's basement singing his songs.
So he put all three of you together.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were just like, I know another girl, Cindy.
Right. I told him, I told him about her voice. I said, oh, you so got to hear.
How did you know Cindy could sing? You just hung out with her?
Well, yeah, like I said, I was right over her.
But had you sung with Cindy, or you just heard her sing before?
Well, we kind of played music, and we sang to the music. And I think I even went to her church a time or two.
Okay.
To and I heard her sing, you know. So it was just meant to be. Because I don't understand how Richard and I ended up talking about singing, you know. So then we ended up bringing it together, and we played it. Spent many hours in his basement learning tunes.
So, and he originally put you together with, and it wasn't, was it with the intent of recording you as a vocal group?
Or background? I'm not quite sure what his intentions were. I think it was more, in the beginning, background, because some of the songs he had, or that he had written, were for a male singer.
Okay.
So it would have been just us as background, you know. And eventually, somehow it ended up he had some songs he wanted us to do.
So you ended up being background on one of his earliest records, which was one of his hits, which was I'm Not Ready to Settle Down, right?
Right.
Which was your brother's group. So that must have been pretty exciting, at least to hear your voices on the radio.
A star was born. Yeah,
buddy. But then another thing that Richard was doing advertising, right?
Mm-hmm.
So did he use your voices on advertising?
He used to
write commercials.
Yeah, he wrote commercials, and I did a couple of those for, as a matter of fact, right before he got sick, we were doing one for WHPK.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, yeah, he did commercial. We did, what was that other commercial? Weren't we on some voices for WVON?
No,
I
it
think?
Was WBE.
Thank you.
WBE.
Yeah.
So was that, were you first doing commercials, or were you first doing background stuff for music? What did he first have you doing?
Background.
So you were first. He first intended you to have you as part of his whole production thing.
Right.
Cause,
yeah. Because
he talked about it in an interview, like he had a guy to do strings and he had a guy to do piano, and you were his girls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's the way he thought. Everything was part of the plan that he had. He was planning to have this Motown Chicago.
But he was kind of like a studio wizard.
Yeah.
And you were like one of his tools.
Right.
Kind of.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So then how did he end up actually recording you as a group? So you didn't even have a name originally.
No.
So how did he end up recording you as a group? Like, did you want to record as a group originally, or were you just happy to be his backup vocals?
We were happy. I was happy to be in the studio. Because when I went to the studio, that was my drug. That made me high. I was just happy as I could be. I mean, the aura, the you know, you get in this room and the lights are low and you got these earphones on and the music comes through.
So you were just excited to be involved with music.
Yes.
Okay.
It was different. So then
it must have been more. So did he propose that he record you as a group? Or did you propose?
No,
that?
He proposed.
He actually said, you know what, I want you all to try something. And he would say that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Try this. You try this part, you try that part, you try the other part, mm-hmm. and see how it comes out.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
And he'd say, no, I don't want you to try it like that. I want you to try it like
that. Absolutely.
And then he would sit and he would listen to what he had decided he wanted to hear. And if it really felt comfortable to him and he enjoyed it, you could just see the smile roll across his face. And he just sat back, you know, I imagine, look what I have created.
Mm-hmm.
He was a nice guy, though. We loved him.
So the first record he released on you. So did he also come up with the name The Voices?
I'm gonna say yes.
Yeah, I think so.
So the first record he released on you was called Fall in Love Again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a nice record. Did it get any play on the radio?
A little. It got a lot more play once he had his own radio show.
Okay.
Then he really would play it. He'd say, listen to the radio. You're going to be surprised. And, you know.
So he actually put it out before he put it out on his own label, mm-hmm. but I didn't realize he put it out before he had his own radio show.
Yeah.
And then the second record he released, I like it a little bit better, and I'm going to play it so people know what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The second record he released was called Forever is a Long, Long Time. Mm-hmm. Both records are really nice, but I like the second record a little bit better, and we've been talking for a while. So I'm going to play it now.
Okay.
So this is the second record that he released on his Penny label, By the Voices. This track is called Forever is a Long, Long Time.
The heart is the same, never again will be.
for this long.
I'm 40 years old. I'm so proud of me. Thank you so much for having me come out here.
Yeah. I'm sorry, it's hard when I tell
you. Okay,
it would be incredible if we did, you know, revive some of that.
Okay, so that was just the voices with Forever is a Long, Long Time, and the part you didn't see was they were all singing along to the record. So that was your second record, and first of all, who sings each part on the record?
Well, I'm a high soprano, so I sang the lead part, and then we did the background part, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and then someone else says the baby at the end?
Yeah.
Who says the baby?
That's Frank of the Cheers.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
What's Frank's last name?
Frank Norfleet. Frank Norfleet of the Cheers.
Okay. So are all the Cheers' last names Norfleet?
Absolutely.
Okay. And was your last name at the time Norfleet also?
Yes.
Okay. So did that record get any play on the radio?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Not a lot.
Did it get more play than the first record?
I kind of thought so.
It might have.
I kind of thought so.
Did the voices ever do any shows?
Well, we did some shows.
Yeah. We did, the one that stands out in my mind was the one we did at the Regal at the time when Stevie Wonder was there.
Oh,
12-year-old.
What was the song? This is the Thanks I Get.
That's what we sang.
We did a different arrangement on it, but
yes.
I think we came in second on the talent.
You didn't do the Regal show where he recorded Fingertips.
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
Because I think it was recorded at the Regal though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
Okay. But you were mainly a studio group though. You didn't do a lot of shows.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And did you start to do more advertising work for Richard after you recorded that stuff though? You were telling me earlier you had done some ads.
Yeah, we did a commercial for a soft drink. I don't want to mention the name because I don't know if that's a problem if I do.
You can say what it is.
Was it Coke or 7-Up? At any rate, we did a soft drink commercial that Richard wrote.
Do you remember how the ad went?
No.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I'd have to think more
okay.
hard.
do you remember any other products that you did ads for?
Well, we did that back to school. Do you remember that one? Did we do that with Jim Porter?
What, the song?
We did a lead into that song for a commercial Richard was running about going back to school.
Oh.
Okay, we'll get to that later when we're talking about the Cindy and the Playmates. Mm-hmm. So, the voices, so what happened after you were working with Richard then? Did you stay with his Penny label? What happened after, I know you were talking about later you started doing some backup work. What was going on?
Well, Richard had a lot of connections with different people. And so whenever he thought he had a vehicle that he could use one of us or all of us in, he would just ask us to come down and meet him at a studio. And he'd give us some sheet music and say, sing this.
Yeah.
So... You ended up working at another studio, is that right?
I did some studio work on my own, yeah.
Oh, you ended up doing studio work?
I did some. But he is the one that introduced me to the individuals that eventually called me and asked me if I would do some work for him. So he still was a catalyst for whatever was done.
What studio work did you do on your own?
I want to say it was Columbia.
I don't really remember. We as a group went to Al Teen Records.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was getting at.
But 81st and Stony. We sang background behind Sunday Williams, Ain't Got No Problem. And then he had quite a few different artists coming through. A lot of people paying for their own sessions.
Okay.
But they would use us.
Okay.
And so we did a lot of background work.
So the biggest hit that you sang on was Sundays Ain't Got No Problems.
Right.
Which was obviously a big hit in Chicago.
Yeah.
And so you're the no one can do like my man at the beginning of the song.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
With my man.
Yeah. Which I'll play that if we have time.
Because, okay.
And so and you want me to play that now?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I'll play it right now.
My glory.
You love that song.
We're gonna run out of time though. Okay, well this is Ain't Got No Problems, but one other thing before he sent you to All Teen, you did a little bit more backup for Richard. In addition to singing for the Cheers, you sang backup on Ronaldo Domino Say the Word also.
Right.
Which got released on the Blue Rock label. Uh-huh. And he obviously stripped off the Cheers vocals on Nevermore and used it on Ronaldo Domino, and used it on a singer named Jerry Towns.
Right. Right.
So that was also Richard Biggie's productions before All Teen.
Right.
So, but at All Teen, you did backup on Sunday's record, which was the biggest thing you did backup on. Mm-hmm. And I have a list of some other artists you did backup on All Teen. You did backup on Johnny McCall's record on All Teen.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny McCall, he was previously with the Cool Gents, and it sang with a bunch of other groups.
Right.
And you did backup with a singer named Earl Duff.
Yes, we did.
Okay. But right now, as per your request, I'm going to play the Sunday record, Ain't Got No Problems, and we'll talk some more.
Oh, okay.
So this is Sunday with Ain't Got No Problems, backed up by The Voices.
Mm-hmm. Know what to do.
That was nice.
Thank you.
Oh,
so that was just Sunday who was Sunday Williams with her big hit in Chicago, Ain't Got No Problems. And that was backed by the Voices, who are in the studio here now telling their story. So, Dale, you had some story about how you were leading off on that record.
Oh, yeah, in the beginning, for some reason, I'll sing Cindy and Margaret, usually.
We all sing.
Yeah, but that
it was
time,
a perfect balance.
I guess it was the words. It was all in the words.
See how excited you get when you hear something, and it's good, and you did it.
Oh. We were all married at the time.
Yeah.
So we had men that we knew what to do with.
Yeah, we did. Practice.
Like that.
So you're saying that that's your voice starting off a song.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, did you actually have a contract with All Teen Records, or you were just kind of in the studio?
In the studio.
And who ran the record label?
Bill Meeks.
Okay. How many years were you working at that studio?
Well, it wasn't that long. A couple of years or so at most. You know,
because
it wasn't consistent, but he would call us in every time somebody came through to use the studio, and they needed background singers.
Right.
We were.
Mm-hmm. Did the Voices? Did you still have aspired to record as a group, or were you satisfied just doing backup work?
Well, kind of at that time, we were content where we were doing background work because we all. Cindy had a son in November. Margaret had one in a boy in December. I had a girl in December. Our whole lives were written out then. There was no trying to be up front, but we were doing kind of decent as background singers.
So it was because you were focused on your families that
you were
happy to be involved with music just as backup singers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You got to remember that we were all married adults. We were trying to operate a little side career.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us were looking at it.
For me.
We enjoy singing. We enjoyed singing together. We sounded good together. That was really the impetus for it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
You know, we were all involved in employment, raising a family, you know, having a marriage.
So music wasn't your main goal, but you were happy to be involved with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was nice to go into a studio and you work for 2 or 3 hours and you get a nice little check.
You know, all of us come from musical families.
Mm-hmm.
Because where the majority of my family wasn't, but my dad was a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a lot of work. In fact, he was even in the movie A League of Their Own. You know that little clip where they're in a bar and they sing? My dad's in that.
Is your dad a professional drummer? Did he play on? Was he a jazz drummer?
Yeah, more Dixieland and jazz. You know.
What's your dad's name?
Well, my dad's gone now, but his name was Lester Stevens.
Okay. Did he play like what recordings? What famous? Did he play on any famous recordings?
Well, I don't believe he did, but he used to tell me of the people because I believe he played behind Dinah Washington.
Okay.
You know, all like through the scene that was in Chicago.
He played
in clubs.
He played a lot of clubs.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like exciting for you to be involved with music while you were raising your families.
And, oh, yeah.
Right.
So when did you stop being involved with Bill Meek's studio? Like around what year? Like early 70s sometime?
Probably.
Yeah.
71,
yeah.
72.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so at that point, your stories diverge a little bit because two of you went on to be in one group and then one of you went on to be in another group.
Mm-hmm.
So could we first talk about the group that Cindy and Dale went on to be in and how that happened?
Well, Richard knew Bill Meeks. He also knew Jim Porter.
Okay.
These guys were all friends. And whenever we did recordings for Richard, he would bring in some of these other individuals. And at one point, I think Richard was busy trying to get his career off as a radio DJ. And so things got kind of low for us for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But Jim Porter who was a friend of Richard and Meeks, wanted us to try to do something to help a group he had. So he had another group of girls.
Yeah, he sure did.
And he was really trying to get their group off. But he wanted for us to be able to come over and kind of give them some pointers or something. I forget how he put it.
Mm.
But he was trying to say, you know, you guys are a little bit more knowledgeable about it. Margaret was busy with her brothers. And so I think that's the reason why when we got together over there, you weren't available a few times.
So what, you were busy with your brothers, like you were helping them?
Their recordings, a lot of times, well, like all of us did the recordings for them, the background for their recordings. But when they also went out on the road and they went to a couple of clubs, played a lot of clubs here in the city, did a couple of gigs out of town, and... You know, for the weekends, it was practically all tied up. So that's basically what I did.
So you helped them with their touring
yes,
and stuff?
Yes, with their touring and stuff, right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you started working with, you and Dale started working with Jim Porter, helping,
right.
like, mentor a younger girl group that they had?
I think that's kind of why he brought us in.
What, do you remember the name of the younger girl group he had?
I don't know the name of that group.
I can't remember it either.
But at some point... we were at the studio. We were waiting to practice.
Mm-hmm.
And my memory may not be exact, but I think that the lead singer that he wanted to make the group couldn't come. Something happened to her. She couldn't come. So we were just there, and we were singing. And he said, well, can you try this here? Because I don't know what I'm going to do because she's not here. And so we started, Dale and I started singing it. And the other girl that he had for that group came in, and he was trying to get us to sound like the voices. But her voice didn't work with us.
It just didn't blend.
It just didn't blend. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the reason why it didn't blend, but it didn't. And that's how we got involved with him saying, well, wait a minute, maybe I should just get you guys together.
Okay.
And record you guys. And so we started practicing this music that he had. And I got to the point where he liked it. And he said, well, all I have to do now is give you a name.
So Jim Porter ended up forming a new group.
Mm-hmm.
And the group ended up being called Cindy and the Playmates.
Right.
So at the time, Jim Porter was going for a totally different sound than Piggy because... He had a bunch of kiddie, like he had the 8 Minutes who were a kiddie group.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he was going for like a bubblegum crossover sound.
Yeah.
And his big record on you was a kiddie record. What are we going to do now that school is through?
Right.
So even though you were older and had kids,
mm-hmm.
and it has a Jackson 5 type of sound also on it.
Mm-hmm.
So he was trying to sell you as kids. And which is funny because my my friend licensed the record for his record label from Jim Porter, and it's a compilation of kiddie soul records, but you weren't kids at all.
No.
Okay.
No, in 71.
Yeah. We don't even want to go there, do we?
No, in 71, yeah, I think I had a kid in school. Didn't we have kids in school?
Hey.
You like playing it for your kids.
Yeah.
So let me play the record, and then we could talk some more about who the lineup of the group was, because it wasn't just two people, right?
No.
Right.
So let me play the record. This is What Are We Gonna Do Now That School Is Through?
What are you gonna do?
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just Cindy and the Playmates with their first record, What Are We Gonna Do Now That School Is Through? And if you're just tuning in, I have two members of Cindy and the Playmates in here telling their story. So, first of all, Cynthia and Dale sing on that record, obviously.
Right.
And there's two other members on that record?
Yeah, my cousin Cheryl Williams sang a solo part on there. And also another young lady, her name was Edwina Allen at the time.
How did they become members of the group?
Well, my cousin and Edwina, all three of us sang in our church choir.
Okay.
And as I said before, the girl that Jim had didn't work. Mm-hmm. she just couldn't hold the notes. And we all sang in our church choir, which was directed by my Uncle Ioni. And so they agreed to come in and help us out. So they came in that one time,
mm-hmm.
Edwina Allen and Cheryl Williams and Dale and I, and we did that. And then my brother was there, and he did the male speaking part at the end.
Your brother, Homer.
Yeah.
And he actually arranged the record, too, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at the time, he was just getting back in the music industry, and he was working with Jim Porter a lot, I think.
Right.
And right at the end, you can barely hear it because it's on the fade out. But it's funny, you're actually asking him, "Can we go to the point?" Which doesn't mean anything to anyone except the people who live in Hyde Park.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the point is the place right at the edge of the beach.
Feet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We were trying to make it local.
Yeah.
Kind of bring something in that would make it local. It was really a lot of fun. I can just say, of my experiences over these years, this was one of the most fun things I could say I've done.
So that record actually got a lot of play in Chicago, is that right?
It did. It got a lot of play. I actually met Herb Kent many years later after it. And there was a benefit that a group that I was singing in for church was going to be at this benefit. And so Herb Kent came in, mm-hmm. and that was the first time I met him.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him I had made this record. He said, "You made that record? I remember that record." And I said, "You do?" I was so surprised that he even, you know, would remember it. He said, "Yeah, I remember that. That's Richard's. I said, "No, that was Jim Porter." "Oh, that's right. Oh, okay. I said, "He probably knew better than I, you know, because, I mean, that man is a walking history book."
So, actually, I was telling you that record was actually, I don't know, it probably got played in a bunch of other cities because it got well distributed. Like, I was in Memphis, and I was in this one record store that had all this old Stax Volt stock.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just boxes and boxes of Stax Volt records.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, it was only like, you know, Emotions and Dramatics, like everything that was on Stax Volt. And in mm-hmm. the middle of it was just copies of Cindy and the Playmates, What Are We Gonna Do Now? It goes through, like, in the middle of just, it was nothing but Stax Volt, but in the middle of it was Cindy and the Playmates.
I think Jim really wanted to make that a big hit. After all the work was done on it, and he actually heard it in its finished form, I think he really liked it.
You can tell he was going for, like, the Jackson 5
mm-hmm.
bubblegum crossover thing.
Right.
So did he, you were telling me something about, so did you tour at Cindy and the Playmates?
No.
So you were telling me some story about how he had another group mm-hmm. tour
yeah.
as you?
He was going to have this group that we were supposed to come in and mentor. He was going to have them tour and do Cindy and the Playmates.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they would just lip sync what we did. Because, I mean, you know, we're mature at that time.
So he needed somebody young. He needed a kiddie group for the kiddie image.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he was going to have them lip sync to the music that we did.
Do you know if that actually happened? Like he actually had, or you don't know if he actually did that?
I know that he had made arrangements for that group at least once.
Okay.
To go to a political rally that they had. Do you remember that political rally that he was trying
Not
to get us to go to?
Not particularly, but I do remember that he sent them out and it didn't work.
Because the equipment didn't work and they had to actually see.
See that?
Yeah, I think that's what happened. He sent them out. He took them out.
Okay.
They actually were going to be doing the Cindy and the Flame-Aid thing, but...
And then,
those voices were,
so then he recorded a follow-up record on you called Don't Stop This Train. And I'm interested in the history of this because was this actually supposed to be connected to Soul Train in Chicago?
That was my understanding.
So was the idea that it was going to be used as the Channel 26 Soul Train theme or played on Soul Train?
Yeah, because... he was a good friend to Don Cornelius.
Okay.
And so I guess they had discussed that they were going to do this. And so when we did the actual vocal to it, I remember Dale saying, "That sounds horrible."
It was not good.
She said, "That's not us."
It
doesn't
not
sound
good.
Like anything we would do, you know. But he was positive that he's going to come up with something that he could use because he was really looking for the big time.
But did they ever play it on Soul Train?
I thought they did on the one in Chicago. You know, we used to have it here in Chicago, and Don Cornelius was trying a lot of different things.
So he did use it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so he pressed it twice, actually, and one of the times he pressed it, it had a really good B-side that I keep telling you about called A Portrait of God's Love, which... I don't think I have time to play, but if I have time at the end, I'll play it because it's a really nice song that you did. So you actually did one really good non-bubblegum kind of song as Cindy and the Playmates called A Portrait of God's Love, which I don't know why it's called that because those words don't show up in the song. So how long did Cindy and the Playmates stay together?
A couple of years.
Yeah.
And then, did the group break up after that? Like you just kind of drifted apart?
Yeah, I think it was more just a drifting apart.
Yeah.
And then, did you continue on with music after that? Did you go back to singing in the church pretty much?
I never stopped singing in the church.
Okay.
That was always the place where I was doing my singing. I enjoyed singing in the church. I enjoy doing it now.
And at the time, you even were touring with your church?
Yeah.
Okay, and Dale, you continued music after that?
Well, with different groups, yeah. Off and on, you know, none of them did anything, you know. We would just go through we would try the songs out, we would write songs, we would do that and try to get them recorded and everything. My friend Edith, you know, from the Love Masters, we became a writing team.
Okay, well...
And we were taking songs around trying to get them sung, but that didn't happen either.
Well, let me get to everybody's after their career stories, but I want to get to Margaret's story first then. before we run out of time, she's got a long story. So Margaret never made it to Cindy and the Playmates because at the time she said that she was working with her brother's group helping tour. So, but you did end up being in another group, which recorded under two names. So, was the group first called the Extensions, or first called the Brothers and Sisters?
They were first called the Brothers and Sisters.
Okay.
Okay, they were Brothers and Sisters first.
Okay, so how did the Brothers and Sisters form?
Richard, again. In the studio, come down. I want you to listen to some stuff. This is what we're going to do. And at about the time when Jesse Jackson's thing was very big with I Am Somebody, which is the name of the first single that that we recorded, that's how it basically got started. And he had the background, he had the music, and we just came in and did the vocals.
It seemed like the idea behind the Brothers and Sisters was to record kind of uplift political
Absolutely.
Songs.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. That was the time.
And one thing that's funny about I Am Somebody, and which Richard talked about in the interview, is he said he made sure to give Jesse Jackson the writing credits on the record. Because, and I had actually interviewed another group called The Original Breed that did another song called I Am Somebody. Uh-huh. And their record got killed on the radio because they didn't give Jesse Jackson writing credits. So Richard was smart enough to give Jesse Jackson
Absolutely.
The writing credits.
Absolutely.
So they wouldn't kill the radio
this
play.
This is business, guys. Business. This is the business.
So kind of the idea, and you could kind of hear it, it's got, I'm trying to think of the right word, but it doesn't sound like an R&B record. It's got kind of like a spiritual, like kind of feel to
Absolutely.
All your songs.
Mm-hmm.
Like it sounds like an old spiritual, all
it
of
does.
Your songs.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the idea behind the group,
that
was to have like to play it at like to be almost like a rally type song.
Mm-hmm. A rally, right.
So what was the membership of the brothers and sisters?
It was myself, Pat James, Billy Smith, and Claude Wyatt.
And Pat James was Richard's wife at the time?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And how did the other two members join the group?
They were from the Norvells, Richard's first group when he was in high school.
Okay.
Those are two members from the Norvells, Billy Smith and Claude Wyatt.
Oh, I didn't know that, actually.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I should probably play I Am Somebody because that was your biggest,
yeah.
That was your biggest record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is the Brothers and Sisters with I Am Somebody. Okay, that was just the Brothers and Sisters with I Am Somebody. And did that come out right after Jesse Jackson's speech, pretty much?
Like, probably so. It was right in the same, during the same time. You know, we wanted to keep it live, keep it fresh. And I think he really got the idea when he would listen to the Jesse Jackson Saturday morning show, and he would always say, I am somebody. I may be poor, but I am somebody. And then he just wrote it down. This is what we're going to do, boys and girls. And I said, okay.
Okay.
It was born.
But that got a lot of radio play, right?
Yes, it did.
And who sings on it again?
It's myself, Pat James, Claude Wyatt, Billy Smith, and I think these ladies were somewhere in the background. They were in the studio that day.
So the other two voices add
yes.
extra voices.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
And the follow-up record you did, Nobody's going to turn us around actually got radio play also.
Absolutely, it did.
And those two records got released on the Leaner Brothers, Todlintown record label.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they actually got picked up nationally even by Scepter Records, so they got national distribution actually.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So did the brothers and sisters ever tour or do shows or anything like that?
No, we didn't.
So it was just a studio thing?
It was just a studio thing.
Do you know if the records got any national play? You wouldn't know.
I'm going to say I hope so, but I really don't know. Mm. I can't say definitely that it did.
But they definitely were local hits.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
And I have an instrumental thing that he released on you, which obviously you don't sing on an instrumental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I have one more record that you actually do sing on that I recorded for you called Don't Let Them Tell You, which I put on this CD for you.
Okay. Mm. Let me see. Don't Let Them Tell You?
You'll hear it when you listen to it.
Okay.
But it's a similar kind of uplift theme song, like Don't Let Them Tell You.
Political awareness.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like a social conscious
type
song. They're all the same theme.
Absolutely.
So the brothers and sisters were together for a while, and then he decided to switch it up and change your style to be a different kind of group, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how long before he switched it up and made you a different kind of group?
He probably could have switched it up the next week.
Okay.
Depending mm-hmm. on what hit him. Mm-hmm. When it hit him, he brought it to us. You know, so there was no... You couldn't make a pattern out of anything that happened when it was time and he had the idea and it was in play. You came and you did what you needed to do.
So he then renamed you the Extensions,
mm-hmm.
and was that his idea?
Of course.
Okay. was it his idea to spell extension wrong?
You know it.
Or was
it, uniqueness? Unique. Gotta be unique.
What was it? Was it because he couldn't spell, or was it on purpose?
I think it was on purpose.
Okay.
Yes.
Richard never did anything that would appear wrong, because he planned to make things so that they would grab somebody.
Yes.
His thing was always trying to grab an audience, no matter what it was. He was grabbing the audience.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way he was.
Okay. So he cut two records on you as the Extensions.
Mm-hmm.
The first record was called This Love of Mine.
Yes.
And that record actually, it got some play in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
is that right?
It did, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that record, even though it was the same group, it had a totally different sound. Like, because it had less of a spiritual sound, he downplayed the male, like, baritone voices and put the female voices up front.
Yeah.
Like, you could barely tell that there's men in the group, even though it's the same.
That was part of his genius.
Mm-hmm. So, and then the second record he did was a cover of the Supremes' Your Heart Belongs to Me,
yeah.
which is a Vietnam record, actually.
Yeah.
And it's got his signature production style on it with the kind of psychedelic
mm-hmm.
Production sound.
Yeah.
Although the first record was a bigger hit, the second record, I like it better just because it's a better... I like the song better.
Thank you.
Do you want me to play one of the songs?
Yes.
Which song would you like me to play?
You know which one.
You want me to play Your Heart Belongs to Me?
Of course.
Okay. Okay, well, I'll play Your Heart Belongs to Me. Yeah, here it is. Okay, here it is.
Far away, sad. tell you how I yearn for the day to come when you will return from far across the sea. Remember that
okay, that was just the Extensions with their second record called Your Heart Belongs to Me. And that was a really nice version of the Supremes record. And I know the first record, This Love of Mine, got some play. Did that record also get any play?
Which one?
Your cover of Your Heart Belongs to Me?
Yeah, it did. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So who sings lead on that record?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
Margaret?
Me,
you sing
Margaret
me?
And we were just talking, so, and the other two women in this room also sing backup, add extra backup on that record?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Richard used everybody on everything.
Right. Everybody. It was a room full of people. Yes, and you were all you.
And everybody had something to do.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And the Extensions never were also a studio group and never
yes.
toured or anything
exactly.
like that.
Uh-huh.
And we were talking about how Claude later had another group called Common Law that the Voices sang backup on. Cindy and the Playmates sang backup on, or like some of you sang
yeah.
backup on.
Yeah, right.
It was really us at that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We had a dual thing going with Porter and Richard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When Richard called and said, "I need you guys," we would just go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he had some deep history too, since he was with the Norvells and the Brothers and Sisters, and had a group
right.
called Common Law.
Mm-hmm. And also with Richard, when he got deep into this business, and people would call him needing backup singers for any reason. We were always sent.
Yeah.
You know, we did a whole lot of backup for a whole lot of other people. Be here. This is what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you remember any other, like, because we talked about the stuff you did at All Teen Records. You don't remember any other labels or artists you work with? Oh, yeah, one other thing you sang backup on the Frankie Newsom and the Soul Invaders' My Lucky Day.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Do you remember any other backup work you did?
Oh, God. It's so much work that we did at the time. And
are you talking about with Porter or with...
With anybody.
Well, with the Al team, well, you said Johnny McCall, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy named Earl Duff.
Mm-hmm.
There was Sunday Williams.
Mm-hmm. And there was a boys group, guys group that he had us backing up.
On All Teen?
Mm-hmm.
The only guys group I know on All Teen was Drake and the Insolids.
Well, we did a lot for Drake. Everything, a lot of the songs that were written by
Drake McGillivray.
Yeah.
Okay. So did the Extensions break up, or you didn't break up because you were never officially a group anyways? You were just kind of a studio
group? We just had a studio group, right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if, you know, it was the thing that if he needed something or you wanted something, he called us. We came together.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So we were just studio only.
Okay. So So I think we went through all the different recording groups that all of you were in at
mm-hmm.
this point. So did any of... So I think at this point we could go through and talk about what each of you have done since these groups. So, Cynthia, you were talking about how you continue to remain active in your church.
Mm-hmm.
So have you recorded anything else with your church, or have you continued to tour with your church? What have you done?
Both things. We did make a recording, a long-playing recording. At that time, they're called LPs. Way back in the Stone Age. So we do have
When did your LP come out?
I want to say in 73 or 74.
What was the name of the group?
Hyde Park Youth Choir.
Okay.
Hyde Park Seventh-day Adventist Youth Choir.
What label was it on?
Oh, now that's a good one. I don't know. I've got a copy.
Okay.
I've got a copy. And I also do some...
I bet I could recognize your voice on it.
Probably. Yeah, my cousin Cheryl also has a very nice voice.
Okay.
And she sang lead on some songs, as well as the other young lady that sang with us at Wena Allen. She did some lead work on the church choir recording. So there's about 15 songs on there. And so quite a few.
And have you ever, since then, have you remained active in singing and recording with your church?
Well, not recording, but with singing.
And have you toured with your church at all, or just you sing every
that
Sunday?
That youth choir that we had traveled quite a lot. We would sing in different cities, you know, across the United States. We went to Jamaica. We also went to the Bahamas.
Okay.
As a choir. We actually sang from Chicago to Florida, where we boarded a plane to go to the islands, and we did concerts all the way down.
When was that?
75, I believe. And our trip was sponsored by the airline. I'm trying to remember the name of it. I got it. I can see the picture, United Airlines.
Okay.
I can see the picture of us all lined up in the airport, and one of the photographers for the airline actually took the picture of us.
Okay.
And we had that picture as part of the cover information about the choir.
Okay.
And that was really exciting. Yeah, it was probably the first time I'd ever gone out of the country to an island. And the way we were able to make it is we sang all the way down. We were on a bus, and from Chicago all the way down to Jacksonville, Florida, I think, was the last place we sang. And that's how we made the money to continue the trip. Everywhere we sang, they gave donations to our group.
That's cool.
Yeah, and we stayed for about a week down in Jamaica. Yeah.
And since then you regularly sing in your but you haven't done any secular music since then.
No.
Okay.
No, I really haven't been involved in any secular groups.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Margaret, have you done any music since the extensions?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay.
And outside of church, that's basically the extent of it. When the cheer stopped touring and recording, you know, everything, you know, you just drift away, you just separate, you go your separate ways. But I thought about it a lot. And maybe this meeting up with these ladies again, who knows what can happen.
Okay. But the cheers recorded, they had like a later, they had a recording in like 74, though. They had like a
I can't remember. Well, you know, the lead singer Benjamin passed away, and so that just leaves Marilyn, John, and Frank. And as far as I know, it's not too much going on with them either. But I've thought about it a lot, and it's something that we do well. And I'm, you know, anything is possible.
Okay.
Anything can happen. You know, all responsibilities have been filled. Children are grown. You don't have an awful lot more to do, so just do it for you, and that's cool.
But you still sing in church?
Yeah, still sing in church.
Okay.
Okay.
And Dale, you were talking, I cut you off earlier, but you had started to talk about how you, after Cindy and the Playmates broke up, you had started songwriting, is that right?
Right.
So what's the story with that?
Nothing ever happened. We did a lot of writing.
You
and it was good songs.
So you and who was your partner?
Edith Andrews.
And she had previously been in a group called the Love Masters.
Love Masters, yes.
Who would, and they were the group that did that song Push and Pull.
Right.
Okay.
Pushing and pulling. Yeah, because there was a bunch of push and pull out at that time. You know?
Okay.
But Edith and I, we kind of would write songs together. And, nothing ever happened. You know, you get your hopes way up in the ceiling and then crash down. So we kind of went our, Edith and I kind of went our separate ways. And right now I'm involved in St. Albie's Choir. Or St. Albie's Inspirational Choir. Gospel. It's so good. I marveled at the sound of that choir when I just went to church there. And the Father Breslin, he said, join the choir. I said, well, how did he know I sang? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And from there on, it's been singing with the choir. I mean, you know. Gets me to church.
And it's great. It's great that you're still singing and doing something you love.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's just me. I'll probably go out on a note. You know. Richard made me sing some notes I didn't know I could touch. You know, and Renardo Domino's. You know, just say the word. Boy, he had us reaching for the ceiling.
And we got it, though. Yeah. We got it.
Yeah.
So when you were writing songs, though, like what made you decide to stop singing and start writing? Like what inspired you to start trying to write songs?
Well, with the different groups, you know, they wouldn't last long. So you get your hopes all, you get a sound that sounds good, then people disappear on you.
So you had actually formed a few groups at that time? What were the names of some of the groups you had formed?
You know, I don't know that we ever got enough
mm-hmm.
to get a seriously think of a name. I did have one, but I can't think what it is now. Mm-hmm. But we, Edith and I, we wrote A&M Production.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Andrews and Myrick Production. Mm-hmm. We tried our best to. We actually, when Bill Meeks took over Chess Record, we took a song down there. He recorded, but nothing happened with it. You know?
So he recorded it on another group?
We had this singer. Her name is just
can't
gone
think of her
now.
Name, but I can see her just as clear.
Yeah, but we did this. We did two or three songs with him, but nothing ever happened to
you,
him.
You don't have the tape of it, do you?
No.
Okay.
Well, you do have a tape of it.
I could get the tape transferred for you.
That would be nice.
We'll see.
When did you do it?
That would have been in the mid-80s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so out of all your songwriting, you had one song produced. I mean, three songs produced on one artist.
Right,
and that's
right.
The only thing that was ever recorded out of all your songwriting.
Well, a song we recorded with Jim Porter was one of my songs.
Mm-hmm. Which song was that?
It was called Hey D.
Hey D.
And I messed up the lead, so it never went anywhere. But he did record it.
He just never released it.
Right.
It was
right.
By Cindy and the Playmates.
Yeah, it was Cindy and the Playmates.
So there's an unreleased Cindy and the Playmates song called Hey D that was never released.
Right.
Okay.
Written by Dale Myrick.
Okay.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to hear those tapes. I don't know what happened to the tapes. I don't know if she still has them.
I wouldn't know what happened to the Hey D one.
Okay.
Because that one was kind of sketchy. You know, it was on the old 8-track. No,
yeah.
Not 8-track. The
real.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me play, since we have a little bit of time, I'm going to play the song that I was talking about earlier called A Portrait of God's Love, mm-hmm. which is that good Cindy and the Playmates record I was talking about.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to play Soul Train because you don't like that song.
No, it's not Soul Train. It's Don't Stop the Train.
I'm not going to play Don't Stop This Train.
Yeah.
And then I'll play A Portrait of God's Love and we could talk a little bit more.
Okay.
So this is Cindy and the Playmates with A Portrait of God's Love.
Thank you.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just a really nice record by Cindy and the Playmates. That track was called A Portrait of God's Love. And that record was also later re-recorded by the 8 Minutes, who were another Jim Porter group on their album. And they re-recorded it just as the name I Love You, which maybe makes more sense because the word Portrait of God's Love don't appear in the song. But that was a better version of it, the original version of it.
I Love You, I can remember that.
Yeah, probably maybe they just made up a title for it.
Portrait of God's Love.
But that's what it says on the record label, though.
Mm.
So if you're just tuning in, we've been doing an interview with members of Cindy and the Playmates, who are all the Voices originally, and one of the members also recorded in the Brothers and Sisters and the Extensions. So I got to say thanks so much for coming to the studio and telling your story. I really appreciate it, and you women had a very interesting story. Thanks so much for coming down.
Our pleasure.
Do you have any last words for the listening audience?
I appreciate it. It came as a shock when Cindy called me to say that somebody was interested in what we had done 40 years ago, and we're loving it. We're loving it. We appreciate you bringing back some old memories for us. Thank you.
It was terrific. A star was born again. I just was reborn sitting in the studio listening to the music. It's awesome. And we can do this anytime you want us to.
It could be the weekly interview.
You made three old ladies very happy.
Okay, well, thanks again. And this last record I'm going to play is a record you sing back up on. This is Ronaldo Domino with Say the Word.